This is Valley Edition. I'm Laura Satsui. This week, California lawmakers began honing in on a plan that would divert money away from high-speed rail and instead fund transportation projects in major hubs like the Bay Area and Southern California. Los Angeles Times national correspondent Ralph Vardabedian has been covering the bullet train's development. He says this plan is a response to Governor Gavin Newsom's announcement that high-speed rail will only cover the San Joaquin Valley.
What they're talking about doing is completing all of the existing construction from Madera to Wasco, but not extending the construction to Bakersfield to the south and Merced to the north, and not electrifying the line. All of that would save about $5 to $6 billion, which the plan would be to spend on commuter rail on Metrolink and in the Burbank to Anaheim corridor and Caltrain in the San Jose to downtown San Francisco corridor.
Did you hear from any people in the Central Valley about, you know, how, I don't know, their reactions to that, especially because it sounds like if they're not electrifying the line, then it isn't quite the bullet train it might have been promised to be, right?
So it would still be much faster service than you have with the Amtrak system that now serves the Central Valley. And I'm sure there are going to be people who are opposed to any kind of change. But there are going to be people who are not opposed to that. And I'll mention in Kings County, they're trying to exit from their lawsuit against the project specifically because they don't think it's going to be a bullet train anymore, and they see less reason to oppose it for that because of that. So I think that we're really at the front end of understanding how the Central Valley will feel about this and how other groups and stakeholders across the state will feel about it. It's an early disclosure, and I think there's a lot that we have to understand about it before anybody really can say where it's headed.
The change would be a blow to those hoping for a true high-speed rail. In the meantime, construction is still happening. You can see it along sections of Highway 99. But that work is cutting across farms where some landowners are paying out of pocket to move their crops and irrigation systems. Vardabedian spent time talking to some farmers about how the high-speed rail is impacting the agriculture business.
What that story reported was that a number of farmers had eminent domain actions against them, and they had, in addition to a dispute over the value of their land, some issues with curative costs that they needed to, that they incurred, for example, relocating or drilling new wells, building access roads on their land because their access had changed from the rail alignment, and cleanup issues and various other problems. And those costs weren't being compensated promptly. So in some cases they were had incurred millions of dollars of costs that they had to take care of and bear, and they were waiting for payment, which was delayed.
And in some cases, I understand some of those farmers were you know, filing lawsuits in order to get that money, right?
Actually, the state had sued the farmers under eminent domain to take their land, and there was a dispute over the additional costs that the farmers were incurring while they were negotiating the value of the land. So I'm not aware of any cases where the farmers turned around and sued the state. It was the state that brought suit against the farmers.
I want to read part of what you wrote in that story. It says, many government highway and rail projects end up seizing private land for the greater good, leaving owners angry about the disruption to their lives and the loss of something they worked hard to build. And I want to ask, you know, even when angry, did any of the farmers you spoke to at all agree with the state's mindset that losing their land, you know, was quote unquote for the greater good?
Well, they're all over the map. I mean, you can't say that all the farmers think alike, and I don't know what the predominant or prevailing view is, but I heard farmers, you know, except the fact that there was some merit to the idea of the bullet train. Most of them feel the execution has not been effective, and so from that basis they oppose the project. I think they all feel, you know, a sense that the state doesn't value their role in the economy, and what they do doesn't value as much as they should what they do, growing food. But
and getting back to, you know, the cost of what some of these farmers are losing, you mentioned it's millions of dollars, in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars for some farmers. For those that you spoke to, I mean, what are the stakes here? Are any of them going to be put out of business because of this?
I haven't heard anybody saying that they're out of business, but the costs are mounting and they're tapping loans to cover those costs while they await a settlement of their case. Some of them are, you know, going to lose enough land that they're going to probably turn around and try to buy additional farmland to compensate for what they lost. I think that in many cases they may lose money. They may see a reduction in their income, at least for the foreseeable future.
And so what did the rail authority say when you brought this issue to them?
The rail authority didn't want to talk about any specific farmer or any specific landowner. They acknowledged that, you know, the process of eminent domain is causing disruption in the valley, and their goal is to minimize the problems.
Okay. And so one of the things I read as well in your piece is that, this issue is gets kind of tangled, especially when it comes to like the chain of command and who the farmers talk to, who deals with, you know, the property, and then who ultimately even signs checks to the farmers at the end of that. And then since the story was published, as we mentioned in June, you've also reported that there's been a shakeup in the staff and, you know, in the High Speed Rail Authority. So with that happening, you know, I understand Newsom wants to reduce the amount of consultants, things like that. I mean, do you get a sense that that's going to help sort of expedite the process of farmers getting any compensation?
That's hard to say. From day to day, week to week, and month to month, the problems have persisted. A lot of the required parcels have already been obtained by the state, so all that remains is litigation over the value of the land that was taken. In many cases, there were voluntary agreements and there was no dispute. That should be put on the table as well. Not every piece of land that the authority acquired in the Central Valley resulted in a legal dispute. Many of them did not. But for the ones that did, the problem has been it's a very complicated process, particularly in California. And I think there was a tremendous underestimation by the rail authority about how complex the negotiations would be for these farm land that they were taking. I think they didn't understand how complex the farming operations are in the Central Valley with respect to irrigation, trellis structures, and access roads. So that really complicated the problem, and in many cases they had appraisers who really didn't understand how to appraise complicated agricultural operations. They had land agents who had never dealt with farm issues before. All of that caused some of the problems.
But even noting how complicated that it is, that the farming industry is and eminent domain, dealing with all of that is, do you think in doing this reporting and talking to various people, does anybody have ideas about how this could be streamlined in the future? Or is it going to just, do you think, continue to play out in the complex way that it has to?
Well, the rail authority replaced the top land acquisition person, the director of real property, just within the last 2 weeks. That was a employee of WSP, the lead consultant, the consult company that the rail authority calls its rail delivery partner. That position has not been filled as of yet, and there's been other officials who've left, quite a few in fact. There's a new chief financial officer, the co-chief operating officer was suspended, that's a WSP employee for, pending an ethics investigation by the Fair Practices Political Commission. And there have been a number of other departures as well. So there's been a fair amount of turmoil in the employee ranks.
So I guess with that in mind, I mean, that sounds like it might slow things down, if anything, would you say?
It's not going to speed them up for a while anyways. I think the Rail Authority, the chief executive at the Rail Authority, Brian Kelly, wants to rebuild the organization and is taking to heart some of the findings that the state auditor, Elaine Howell, made last October in the audit, in which she raised some concerns about lines of reporting authority and the use of consultants. So Mr. Kelly was ill for much of last year and this year, so he's back now full time, and we're seeing some of the changes that he had envisioned a year ago now playing out.
All right. Well, we have been speaking with Ralph Vardabedian, national correspondent with the LA Times, about his latest reporting on California's high-speed rail trade, how that's affecting farmers in the Central Valley, and we'll keep looking out for more of your work. Ralph, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thanks.